Chapter 20. The Damsel, the Jewels, and the Discovery. Tuesday, June the 11th, 1191. Adam cautiously made his way through Nottingham Castle, still dressed in the borrowed monk's robes. He looked out of a window. There was a clear night sky. He had no idea what to do next. Things had not gone to plan. He had hoped he'd be back in the forest by now, his wife finally by his side. He'd envisaged the merry men composing a new song about their valiant escape from the castle. Sir Guy would be dead. But no. Little John and the others would no longer be in the feasting hall. He was alone and unarmed. One wrong move and he would be right back in the cell with Tuck. Or worse. He stood there, frozen, looking out of the window at the guards patrolling below. He was horribly outnumbered, but he was also so close to finding her. He tried to recall some magic or spells that he'd once known, but his memory came up short. I really should start writing things down. Desperation began to gnaw at him. He toyed with the possibility of drawing the sigil of the beast, but he resisted. The last time he'd made a deal with the devil, it had not been worth it. And then it hit him. Marion. Marion must still be here. Could she get him out? Could he find her chamber? She'd placed the flowers on the sill in her room. That was on the south side of the castle, on the top floor of the tower. At least that would make things easier. Only one room at the top of a tower. He managed to get to her door, only having been seen by one of the castle cooks, who'd helped himself to a cask of leftover wine. A quick amen from Adam, followed by a mighty belch from the cook, was all the conversation they'd had. Adam knocked. He heard Marion's voice through the oak door. "Sir Guy, if that is you again, I swear I will be calling the guards. Lady Marion, it's me, Robin." The door flung open immediately. "Oh, Robin, I'm so sorry. I have no idea what happened, how the sheriff even knew." Marion flung her arms around his neck. She smelt of roses. Adam allowed himself to breathe in deeply before stepping back. "It's not your fault, my lady. Your plan was perfect. I couldn't keep my emotions in check." What are you going to do now?" asked Marion, pulling him into her room and locking the door behind them. "The sheriff dismissed every guest in the castle as soon as you were taken away." "I need to get back to the forest and rally the men," Adam said, making his way to Marion's bed. He pulled off the sheets. "But do you have time? John plans to leave first thing in the morning after, well, after your execution. He will take the woman with him, I'm sure, but what he actually wants with her I have yet to discover." Adam began tearing at the sheets. "I don't know what else I can do. A knock at the door made them both jump.
"Who are you talking to, my lady?"
There was no mistaking Sir Guy's drawl. Though his voice was no longer slurred, he'd clearly sobered up a tad since the feast. "Try and get rid of him," whispered Adam. "But whatever you do, don't open the door." Adam began tying the strips of torn sheet together. "Sir Guy, I am busy talking to God," Marion shouted through the door as Adam continued to make his rope longer and longer.
"Good girl. Well, let me in, and I will join you in prayer."
Sir Guy's fist hammered harder at the door.
"Oh, go to bed, Gisborne, you drunken disgrace of a man."
Marion regretted her words the moment she'd said them. With an almighty crack, the door splintered from its lock. The large frame of Sir Guy of Gisborne barreled into the room. His fist was curled menacingly around his sword's hilt. Marion span around for help, but the legendary Robin Hood had vanished.
"You and I have been playing these games for too long, my lady."
Sir Guy spat, striding towards her. Marion backed up against the wall. Her hands found the large iron torch ensconced on it behind her. She tore it from its holder, brandishing it towards the night, flame first.
"If you touch me, I swear to God I will kill you."
"Then I will die a happy man."
Sir Guy's sword was out in a flash. With one quick downwards swing, the torch was torn from her hands and clattered to the floor. While his sword was lowered, out of nothing but pure instinct and the rage she felt for this man, the maid swung her fist with all her strength. Sir Guy's nose broke with a sickening crunch. The blooded knight dropped his sword, which in turn knocked the torch. It rolled towards the floor-to-ceiling tapestry, where the flame flickered and jumped. Finished! Adam popped up from behind the bed, holding the bedsheet rope up triumphantly. "Where the hell have you been?" shouted Marion. "Under the bed. I was waiting for the perfect moment. Which is now?" He took in the blooded Sir Guy. Great punch, by the looks of it. Adam launched himself over the bed, swinging the end of his rope, which had been tied, Marion clocked, into a loop. Adam tossed it expertly over Sir Guy's head and pulled. The fabric tightened round his neck. Red blood dripped from his nose, blooming on white linen.
"You!" gasped Sir Guy, trying to get to his feet.
"Yes, me," growled Adam. He yanked hard, and the knight fell back to his knees. Sir Guy felt for his sword as he gasped for air, but Marion kicked it away from his scrabbling hands. The flames from the torch were now licking the wooden beams of the ceiling.
"You killed a boy last week," Adam said, his voice cold. Marion was a little frightened. He seemed like a completely different man.
"Robin, the room is on fire. If you're going to kill the fool, do it quickly." But Adam wasn't listening. Rage was building inside him as he remembered Will's lifeless body.
"I couldn't save him. Why can't I ever save them?" Adam cried. "You were meant to shoot me!"
The knight couldn't speak. His eyes bulged comically.
"This isn't what's important right now," Marion coughed as smoke began to fill the room. "Think about the woman you're here to rescue. We can't save her if we burn to death."
Adam's hands loosened. The knight tore the loop from his neck. Marion picked up the sword and made her way to the window.
"Let's go!"
Adam gathered up his makeshift rope. He took the sword from Marion, holstering it in the monk's sash. He then threw the rope out into the night air, fastening the loop securely around the stone window ledge.
"Will it hold too?" Marion asked.
"Only one way to find out. And you, Sir Knight, there is a special place in hell for people like you. If you think these flames are bad, you've not felt anything yet."
The last thing Sir Guy saw before the smoke filled his lungs was the outlaw Robin Hood and the beautiful maid Marion jumping out of her bedroom window into the night. Then everything went dark. The crackling of the flames stopped, and he heard the sound of running water and a boat being rowed slowly towards him. The burning tower was visible to everyone in Nottingham. The drunks and the destitute still on the streets were the first to notice, but soon everyone was looking up at the blaze. Little John and the merry men hadn't left the city. As soon as they'd been escorted from the dining hall, having seen their unconscious leader dragged away, they piled into a local inn. The landlord was sympathetic to their cause. They'd planned to stay until the morning, attend the execution, and attempt a daring rescue. This, of course, needed some adjustments now that they'd seen the fire.
"That can only be Robin," John bellowed. "Come on, lads."
And with that, the band of outlaws donned their green cloaks, red hoods and weapons. The merry men reached the castle just in time to see Adam and the maid Marion appear on top of the fortress's outer wall.
"Am I glad to see you?"
Adam cried, flying down what appeared to be a white rope. He slid down the battlements, followed shortly by Marion.
"Why, you're dressed like a friar," John guffawed, embracing his friend.
"I thought it was rather fetching," said Adam, removing the straw pillow from his belly.
"Well, you can't rescue your lady dressed like that."
John opened a sack, throwing Adam his own clothes and hood. Adam nodded in appreciation. It would be much easier to escape the city in the same garb as his men, rather than the monk's trappings or the blue silks of Atik.
"I can't thank you enough, my lady,"
said Adam, turning to Marian. You will always have my friendship.
Good, yes. Well, very well, you know, go and save her then.
Marian gave her hero a small punch on the arm in what she hoped was a casual manner. Turning to one of his men, Adam ordered, take this lady to safety. I've already put her in too much danger.
Take her back to inn. We'll come and get you when this is all over, John added.
Very good, replied the young outlaw, who was quite pleased to be going in the opposite direction to the burning castle. He and Marian stole into the night. This was not how she would have written the ending of her affair with the infamous Robin Hood.
Sir Guy's dead, said Adam, turning to John. He began changing into his own clothes.
I left him to the flames.
Good man,
John handed Adam his bow, a full quiver of arrows and his stone axes.
Now, let's finish this, Robin.
Adam. My real name is Adam. Adam looked into the big man's eyes. They betrayed nothing.
I'd stick with Robin.
One by one, the men scaled the wall into the courtyard.
Stay as quiet as you can, whispered Adam. Only take the shot if it's absolutely necessary. Try and bring them down without killing. I've had enough death.
The men followed his orders. They moved methodically, the sharper-eyed among their party pointing out movement in the dark, while the light of foot snuck up behind them. The guards fell, one by one. They had cleared about half the courtyard and were approaching the castle door when they heard a yell. Young David had tried his luck on a guardsman nearly twice his size. Brave lad, but a bloody fool. The yell was heard by one of the sentries on the battlements. Then the bell began to ring and the horn began to sound.
Cover's blown, Adam yelled. Get into the stables. They'll have crossbowmen up high in seconds.
He wasn't wrong. The first bolt flew almost immediately, and one of the older, slower outlaws fell, a bolt protruding from the back of his neck. The other men made it to the stables. Iron tips punched into the thick wood of the stable doors, but none made it all the way through. The horses were thoroughly spooked. Then, suddenly, the volleys stopped. The men looked to each other, unsure of their next move.
Outlaws, a smooth, commanding voice rang out. You have set my home ablaze. You have moved against the ruling monarch of this great country. For this, you will die.
The sheriff was on the other side of the courtyard, illuminated by the flames of the south tower. He was standing on the steps leading to the main door of his castle. He was in dark mail, the sigil of Nottingham on a blood-red tunic, sword in one hand and shield in the other.
Sheriff! Adam shouted. I'm sorry about this. I found your hospitality somewhat lacking, and I thought I'd have my friends come and collect me. But I hear you have another guest whom you're entertaining. Let the woman go, right now, or I'll put an arrow between your eyes.
Oh, you're here for the witch, are you? Cackled the sheriff. I'd like...
Adam's first arrow took flight, on course to land right where he said it would. The sheriff managed to raise his shield at the last second. The shaft pierced through the leather and wood, the tip stopping only an inch from his pupil. Adam ducked back down and looked to his men. Hold until all the crossbowmen on the battlements have fired their first volley. Then release the horses and return fire. Leave the ones in the courtyard to me. Before they could object, Adam had left the stables and was out in the open yard. He looked round quickly, assessing just how outnumbered he was. He saw a number of crossbows pointing at him from on high and a handful of spearmen in the yard before him. Adam had seen these crossbows in use in the forest. They were accurate and powerful, but took about 20 seconds to reload.
Kill him, the sheriff barked.
The bolts flew. Adam zigzagged to avoid the shots fired from above. He then strung his own bow. His first arrow landed deep in the flesh of a man's thigh. The spearman's leg bucked immediately. Adam heard the man's spear fall on the stone floor of the courtyard as the rest of the sheriff's men advanced. Adam's second arrow caught another spearman in the shoulder. This didn't bring him down. He continued to charge towards Adam, swinging his spear maniacally. Adam pivoted away, using Sir Guy's sword to counter the wild stabs, when suddenly one of the crossbow bolts found Adam's ribs. Instinctively, he clutched his hand to the wound, dropping the sword. This was too much for the merry men to bear. They launched from the stables and returned fire on the bowmen of the battlements, many of whom were now in the process of restringing. Adam gathered his resolve. It was only pain. He knew pain. The spearman, seeing Adam's injury, went in for a final blow, raising the spear high above his head. Adam, wincing, quickly rolled towards his opponent, pulling an arrow from his quiver and plunging its head deep into the tendon on the back of the man's leg. The spear missed its mark. Adam grabbed it with both hands and spun it, connecting the blunt end to the man's temple. Adam looked towards the sheriff, who was busy calculating the likelihood of victory when so many of his guards were falling. Adam snatched up the fallen sword to charge his foe, but a hand grabbed him by the shoulder. Adam spun round, kicking the guard hard in the chest. He fell back against an empty wooden rack, one usually used for holding spears and pikes. Two arrows through the hands from the merry men kept Adam's attacker fixed in place. The sheriff began to retreat inside. Adam looked from him to John. The giant man was bleeding from his own bolt wound, but grinning madly.
"We'll hold him off here, lad. Go after the bastard. Find your wife."
"John." Adam studied his large friend. The bolt was in his shoulder. Not a fatal wound.
"Go."
Adam tore after the sheriff into the castle. He caught up with him in the feasting hall where they'd had their last encounter. There was nowhere left for him to run. The sheriff spun to face him, sheathing his sword and lowering his shield. "Let's not do anything hasty, shall we?" said the sheriff coolly. "Hasty was exactly what I had in mind." Adam raised his bow. "Look, you can kill me now. I've seen how you use that thing. I might be able to block a few more with the shield, but it would only be a matter of time before the inevitable takes place." The sheriff held up his hands. "Let's try to be reasonable. I assume you're here to steal this witch that the prince is so obsessed with." "She is not a witch." Adam drew back the string. "Oh, you know her already, do you? Fascinating. Look, he doesn't want to keep her forever. He just wants to know. I don't care why he has her. I just want her back." "Where is she?" Adam spat, but he lowered his bow. "And what's your plan for when you finally do reach her? How are you going to get her out? And even if you do, he'll never stop looking for her. I suppose you could kill the prince, but do you think there will be anywhere safe for you two in the whole of England if you commit regicide?" "I don't like killing," said Adam. His voice was quiet. "I don't like hurting people. But you do. I had a young friend whose hand you cut the fingers from, and I know that every single ring you wear comes from someone who suffered the same fate. You were put in charge of this city, and you filled it with your greed and your cruelty. The people of Nottingham deserve justice. Will deserves justice. An arrow is too quick a death for you." Adam slung his bow over his shoulder. He withdrew the stone axe that had killed Dennis and saved Will. In his other hand, he held Sir Guy's blade. The sheriff's long fingers drew his sword and picked up his shield. He lunged at Adam with a wolfish snarl. Steel hit stone. Sparks flew from the force of their blows. Adam sprang back and studied his opponent. Any man who chose to fight with a shield was unlikely to make careless mistakes. Adam flung the tomahawk in a wide arc at the sheriff's head, the shield raised to catch it. Adam used the moment that the shield covered his foe's eyes to dart forward, kicking him hard right in the shield's centre. The sheriff stumbled back, swinging his sword to stop Adam's advance. The two swords came together, hilt to hilt, the two men eye to eye. The sheriff abandoned his shield to put more weight into this deadly embrace. But he swiftly realized he was not stronger than the outlaw. He could not win this fight with honor. His eyes fell to the bloody wound on his opponent's side. He released his left hand, allowing the sudden weight change to stagger Adam, and then drove a mailed fist hard into the man's damaged ribs. Adam winced and fell to one knee, raising his head and sword to parry another blow. That was when he could see that the smoke from the tower had reached the hall, decorating its boughs with menacing clouds. The sheriff's knee came up fast, catching Adam in the chin. Blood filled his mouth. The sword came down again. Adam pulled back, but not far enough. The steel bit into his shoulder and stuck deep. "That'll be a mortal wound there," said the sheriff triumphantly. "You're right. Pity for you. I'm not mortal." Adam grabbed the steel with his bare hand and wrenched it from his own shoulder. The sheriff pulled away in horror. "You're just like her. A monster." "No, my dear sheriff," said Adam, getting to his feet, his blood falling freely to the floor. "I am just a man, though a strange one, I grant you. Get back, in the name of God." The sheriff's fear had overcome his form. He was swinging wildly. "God? I've met him. He'd like you, actually. Very much a stickler for authority and rules." Adam blocked the sheriff's attacks with his one good arm. The other was going to need a bit more time. "I've been living day after day, sunrise to sunset, for 70,000 years. No shortcuts, no rest. I've spent entire centuries in captivity. I've gone mad more times than I care to count, but I never lost hope entirely. Because, you see, I realized, whilst being burnt by volcanic ash about 1,000 years ago, as I saw my skin blister, my flesh cook, and felt my eyes melt, that I've got all the time in the world, which means one day I will win. I'll defy God's rule, get my wife back, and be whole once more." The remainder of their duel was not long. The sheriff lost. First the fight, then his hand, then his life. But he never gave up his prisoner's location, stubborn and proud to the last. Adam would have to pay the prince a visit. He would still be hiding in his tower, the one that flew the king's banner. Adam removed the sheriff's coin purse and let the gold fall to the floor before stuffing the severed long-fingered hand inside. As he made his way up through the castle, a smile grew on his face. It was almost over. The bells were still ringing, the horn still blowing. He could hear the sound of battle in the bowels of the fortress. He turned into the top corridor of the royal tower to find a handful of frightened men standing guard over a terrified prince. After a brief demonstration of how quick their deaths could be, a couple of arrows and a hand, he made them an offer of life. A very sensible young man named Norman accepted it, and the others quickly followed suit, until the only two left in the corridor were Prince John and Robin Hood.
"Where is my wife?"
Prince John begged and pleaded for his life the entirety of the walk from the tower. Adam said nothing. He didn't even register what the prince was saying. This was it. He was going to hold her again for the first time in millennia. Finally, the castle was quiet. The bells had stopped ringing, the horns had stopped blowing. The first hints of dawn were visible. It looked like it was going to be a beautiful morning. They walked back through the entrance hall and found Little John and the surviving merry men standing over the body of the sheriff. The smoke had faded. The fire must have dwindled.
"He should have a key around his neck," the prince said quietly.
John reached down to the sheriff's body and searched. He retrieved the key and threw it to Adam.
"Keep this one alive while I get her," Adam said, pushing the prince towards his men.
Adam reached the door the prince had named and slid in the key. His heart was pounding. Love is unique in the universe in one regard. It motivates you like nothing else. It inspires great acts of bravery. The door opened with a creak and unbelievable stupidity. It took a moment for Adam's eyes to adjust to the darkness. He saw the faint outline of a woman chained to the floor.
Eve? Arthur?
There was only one being who would still call him that, and it wasn't his wife. Adam ran into the cell and fell to his knees. Her skin was covered in burst blisters and some of her bones were broken. The skin that was not bruised was very pale. Her silver-white hair hung long. It would have been beautiful if it weren't caked with dried blood. The only part of her that remained untouched were her eyes, an otherworldly shade of blue.
Vivian!
Tears rolled down his face.
Why did he always allow himself to become so sure? He should have learned by now. Vivian, I thought you were...
I know. You thought I was her. I'm sorry. Vivian was crying now too, tears streaming from her eyes, which were already so much like pools of water, their trails as they ran healing her beaten and bloodied face. I had to make the message cryptic. If you thought it was her, I knew you'd come.
Adam stood and was silent for a time. Then his fist cracked against the stone wall, hard enough to leave blood.
There was no need to deceive me. Of course I would have saved you. I thought you would, but I'd been held like this for months already. I only had one chance to get a message to you. I am so sorry.
Vivian tried to stand, but she buckled on a broken ankle.
You gave me fresh hope, Vivian, Adam said. His voice was flat.
I know, and I'm sorry.
Vivian looked down at the ground, ashamed. Why did they do this to you? How did they do this to you?
The prince. He wanted the sword. He thought it would make him the legitimate king. First, he tried to bargain. He came to the lake and he brought gifts and kind words. And when I told him that the sword was not meant for him, he threatened me. I laughed in his face. I thought I was safe in my lake, but he drained it. He had them cut deep channels into the earth. He bound me and he tortured me. But I didn't break, Arthur. I didn't break. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Vivian slipped from consciousness. Adam caught her before she hit the ground. He carefully unfastened her chains. The raw, blistered skin under her bonds made Adam's stomach turn and his rage flare. He took off his red hood and his green cloak. He gently wrapped Vivian's broken body in them before carrying her in his arms out of the cell. Little John and the men were still waiting for him in the entrance hall. Prince John was cowering alone in a dark corner. The outlaws scared him, but the woman in Robin Hood's arms scared him more.
"You found her," Little John said, his face ecstatic.
Adam couldn't bear to tell him the truth. He just nodded.
"That's fantastic!"
The big man bounded over to help carry her. When he saw the wounds on the woman's wrists, his face contorted with disgust and rage.
"Did he do this?"
Little John demanded, pointing at the prince in the corner. Him and the sheriff. He felt Vivian begin to stir in his arms.
"I'll kill him!"
shouted Little John, picking up a sword and making his way to the prince.
No,
came Vivian's small voice from Adam's arms. He is going to live, and he is going to have a cursed life. No matter how triumphant he tries to be, he will be remembered as a coward and a villain. Take me over to him. Adam walked to the cowering prince. Vivian put her mouth close to the prince's ear and whispered. Here is what's going to happen, Vivian continued with a voice of frost. You are going to leave Nottingham. You are never going to come back to this city. You shall raise not a finger in retaliation for what has happened here. Do as I say and you will live. Disobey, and I will inflict upon you every punishment you gave me. You will beg for death. I will grant it to you. And then I'll follow you to hell. Do you understand me? The prince nodded. Prince John was true to his word. He never returned to Nottingham. He was remembered as a cowardly villain, and at the age of 49 he died after drinking a cup of dirty water, served to him by a wench with long silvery hair.
Nottingham went on to have something of a boom. The royal tax collectors always seemed to miss it on their rounds throughout the country. The new sheriff, John, was known by all the townsfolk as a big man with an even bigger heart. The sun had risen as Adam, still carrying Vivian, walked out of the castle into the courtyard, followed closely by Little John leading the prince and the remaining merry men bringing up the rear.
"You lads," Little John said to a few of their unwounded band, "tend to those still alive. Sheriff's boys too."
Adam looked at the big man giving orders of mercy. Strange to think back to their first meeting, when John had seriously contemplated killing him. Now that the battle was over, the townsfolk had begun to gather at the front gate. They watched the prince, who only a few days ago had ridden into the city on a golden carriage, ride out, driving a simple wooden cart pulled by a donkey.
"I guess you'll be off then,"
Little John said as Adam walked with Vivian to a horse that still looked somewhat shaken after such a distressing night.
"No more need for Robin Hood and his merry men."
Adam turned and looked up at John's bearded, ruddy face. He was crying freely, but smiling also. "Outlaws are only needed when the law is unjust," said Adam, as he swung himself up into the saddle. His friends with the tender hands passed up the poor, broken woman. "I don't know if I'll come back this way for quite some time, but I will sing the ballad of Robin Hood and the Brown Breeches until my last day. Goodbye, John." Adam rode with Vivian out of the city and into the forest. He only stopped when he heard the sound of water. He lay her body in the river. The effect was instantaneous. The lady's wounds were washed away. Every bruise healed, every bone set back in place. The Lady of the Lake stood up tall, pushing her now clean and shining mane from her face. Though her body was healed, Adam could see the remnants of her ordeal in her eyes. "Thank you, Arthur," said Vivian. "I understand if you hate me."
"I don't hate you," said Adam.
He paused before continuing. "I hate that you didn't trust that I would save you. After all we've been through together."
"It won't happen again," she smiled. "I am in your debt."
"Actually, I think this makes us even," Adam smiled.
"I do have something for you."
"I don't need the sword. We've been down that road."
"Excalibur won't help me find her," Adam replied. "Thanks, though." "I've been thinking about that," she said, reaching down into the water and pulling out the most magnificent sword ever created. Its blade shone like moonlight on water. The hilt and crossguard were a twist of gold and silver overlaid with a chestnut grip. "What if we're asking the wrong question?" She presented it to Adam.
Adam took the sword. It felt good in his hand. He had never held a blade as perfectly balanced. "What question should I have asked? I asked it to find Eve, not even 700 years ago, and it did nothing."
"I know. I was there.
And I know you're feeling raw right now, but I am trying to help. Ask it again.
Madam looked at Vivian. Her eyes were sparkling. It was the first time since freeing her he had seen anything other than exhaustion, guilt, or pain etched onto that face. He decided to indulge her, even though he knew it was useless. He raised the sword in front of him.
Oh, mighty Excalibur, forged by the great god Vulcan, please, will you let this humble, blind peasant see his way? Point me to my wife, Eve, the first of womankind.
Silence hung in the air. They both looked at the sword. Nothing. Adam, vexed, looked to Vivian.
I'm not in the mood for games.
Vivian cocked her head.
Tell it to look for me.
But you're standing right here.
Vivian said nothing. Adam sighed.
Oh, mighty Excalibur, forged by the great god Vulcan, please will you let this humble blind peasant see his way? Point me to your daughter, Vivian, the Lady of the Lake.
Adam braced himself and put his other hand on the hilt. He had used the sword to find things before. It wasn't gentle with its hints. But, once again, the sword did not move.
Now that's confusing.
Vivian was now beaming.
Ask it to find London.
Adam was beginning to get rather irritated.
But he raised the sword and spoke again. Oh, mighty Excalibur, forged by the great god Vulcan, please will you let this humble blind peasant see his way? Point me to the city of London, capital of this isle.
The sword swung immediately south and held true, vibrating. For Adam, it was a sensation of striking metal hard on stone. He dropped the sword and it fell deep into the ground. The rampant energy it had just possessed, gone.
So it does still work then, Adam said, scratching his head.
So it would seem. But not on people. Don't you see what this means, Adam?
Adam looked at her. He felt he was being a little slow. To be fair, it had been a long night.
Adam, if you can find the name of the prison in which they are keeping Eve, Excalibur can lead you straight to her.
On any other day in his life thus far, he would have been grabbing Vivian by the wrists and dancing her round in a circle. But the dawn's crushing disappointment was still too fresh.
Thank you, Vivian. Take the sword. Keep it safe for me. When I find the name of this place, I shall return for it.
The Lady of the Lake took back the sword.
God is about to open up a new place named Purgatory. It's for people who don't belong in heaven or hell. Might be a good place to start asking around.
Thank you, Vivian. You know, maybe it's time for you to get out of England. Another king may try to take what is only yours to give.
If anyone ever tries that again, I'll flood the whole country. Goodbye, Arthur. I hope to see you soon. Good luck.
And with that, Vivian sank into the river and disappeared downstream. Adam made sure he was truly alone. Then he sat down beside the river, put his head in his hands, and wept until the sun set.
You've been listening to Evergreen, Chapter 20, written by Sam Russell and read by Catherine Russell. If you enjoyed this chapter, wherever you're listening, please subscribe. Give us a rating and a review so we can get this story into more people's ears. And if you really enjoyed it and want to support this project, you can do so on our Ko-fi page. All details are available on our Twitter account, at EvergreenBook1. The final chapter will be released soon. Thanks for listening.